Good morning. The sun's out. That's very cool. Anyway, I'm Rusty. I'm the senior pastor here. And if you're new here on the campus, we're really glad you're here. If there's any way we can help you, we'd love to get to know you too. And there's at guest services out in the front, we have a gift bag that at least go to the bottom of it because there's chocolate in there. And if you're watching online, we have, and I want to say hi to Mom and Dad. They're in South Carolina. There's a host on there that'd be glad to answer any questions you have and help you navigate anything we can do. We want to make your visit here really a good one, and we consider it a privilege that you'd be part of it with us. We're in a series that we started last week, and we're not trying to be cute. We called it The Hive. I guess you can tell by decorations up here. It's got a bee theme. But a couple of reasons we're doing this. One is that one of our contentions is that God created everything in the universe, and he did it intentionally, not by accident. And that when he created it, he left all kind of clues and evidence for things that you and I can learn from. We can learn about him, we can learn about ourselves, we can learn about how life works, we can also learn lessons of things to avoid. And when you look at nature, his fingerprints are kind of all over it. And then what we do is we take biblical principles and see how they apply. We don't want to just look at nature and draw our own conclusions. What we want to do is see what does the Bible say about this so I understand what I'm seeing and I can learn well from it. And so we're using the honeybee. And honeybees they're really interesting creatures. In fact, you can get local honey anywhere in the world except Antarctica. Apparently, bees just don't like that weather there. So bees are everywhere else, all kind of bees. I think there are 4,000 species of bees. The majority of them, over 90% of them, live solitary lives. That means they're born, they go out and forage, they get nectar and pollen, they have a nest, they lay an egg, and then they die. And the cycle just keeps going. Now those bees are important for pollination, but they don't do anything to create honey, which is why we pick the honeybee. The honeybees live in colonies, and they have a very complex social structure, and as a result of them working together like that, some important things happen. They're very important in pollination, but they also create, in fact, they're the only insect that creates food for humans. I understand that crickets do, but they didn't volunteer for it. If you've ever had cricket flour, which quite honestly, I'm a little disgusted by it, that's entirely different. Bees, honeybees, have created a food that's been human consumption, not only for food, but it's also been used for medicine for over 4,000 years. There have been beekeepers for that long. This is a roughly a pound of honey. This is what it represents. This is orange blossom honey, so it was in an area where they had a lot of orange trees. This is what it took to create 1 pound. Oh, by the way, do you know how many pounds of honey Americans consumed last year? Anyone just read that recently? Take a guess. I will tell you this. Someone mentioned earlier they came up with 8 billion. That's a little high. Just take a guess. How many pounds of honey? How many Americans are there in the United States? What's our population right now? 400? 330 million. 330 million. Okay. Now let's go back to my question. How many pounds of honey did Americans consume last year? 6,000? Someone say 6,000? Well, that's closer than 6,000. 285 million pounds of honey. That's not quite a pound per person, but we're getting close to it. This is roughly 1 pound of honey. This is what it took to create this. 1,152 bees worked to make this happen. They visited close to 2 million flowers to get the nectar that went into this. And they flew collectively, this blows me away, 55,000 miles. Now you would think honey would cost a lot more than it does. But this is, there's a bunch of them and all that, but this is something you see it at Wegmans or wherever you go. It's pretty common, but it took a lot of effort to create it. And we're the beneficiaries of it. Now, I've been learning a lot about bees. I've been reading the Honeybee Biology book and beekeeping. Wow. A friend of mine, Denise Krein, is a beekeeper, and it's remarkable what goes into being a beekeeper. I probably will not become one, but I've been learning a lot about them because, again, God created everything in nature, and he wants us to learn from it. And the more we see how intricate it is, actually for me, it creates more of just an awe that God is who he is, and that he created us and he has purposes for us. So we're going to use this idea of bees. I mean, they have the nickname being, you know, the idea of busy as a bee. We're going to look at this busyness, but we want to look at it in a healthy context. What do you and I learn from this? And we'll be seeing what the Bible says about it. But there's a passage here I want us to keep in mind as we walk through this together. This is on the screen. It's not in your notes. But when you do leave today, there's a take-home sheet you can get outside of each of these doors. On one side, it's got all the message notes. So if you miss a blank or if I miss one, it's all filled in. The other side will help you go further with this study. The Romans 12 says this. It says, just as there are many parts to our bodies, so it is with Christ's body. Whenever the Bible talks about Christ's body, it just means his church. Everyone that's become a follower of Jesus is now part of his church, his family. And to use the bee analogy, we're part of his colony. We are all part of it, and it takes every one of us to make it complete, for we each have different work to do. So there's something that we need to understand. The moment someone crosses the line of faith and becomes a follower, they're now part of Jesus' church. And there's not any insignificant parts of it. Every one of us have something unique and important to bring to it. I'm not saying that all of us are just extra special in that sense. It's just that all of us have been created by God, and there are things that he wants us to do. And in fact, the church will never be what it should be if all of us don't join in and do the part that we can play. It says we each have different work to do, so we belong to each other, and each needs all the others. God has given each of us the ability to do certain things well. The idea that in God's church, there's a wide variety of personalities, education, experiences, capacities, and abilities. And in the way he sees it is that all of us have an important role to play in that. When you look at a beehive, if you ever look inside one of these things, it's really fascinating. I mean, they're just all over the place. It looks like chaos, but it's very organized chaos. There are roles and responsibilities they all have. You don't see any of them off to the side taking a coffee break. Although I'll get into that in a minute. There is something about that that's important with bees. But the idea is that all of them work together. I want to mention this too. I think this is pretty interesting in that one of the things we learn about bees is they're very unimpressive in their size, but they have an amazing impact when they work together. No one has a guard bee. I mean, a bee is not the king of the jungle. That's the lion. I mean, bees, and if a bee lands on you, unless you hear it buzz, you won't know it. It weighs almost nothing. Individual bees are just kind of, they're just not much to them. But when they work together, they're able to accomplish things that are extremely impressive. I mean, the fact that the studies are saying something around 30% of the food you and I eat had been pollinated by bees. If they weren't there would still be some pollination through wind and some other factors, but they're really key players in what you and I live on. Aside from making honey, they're key part of the whole food production process. I'm saying that this idea that they're not very impressive by their size and all this kind of thing is because we live in a culture that for a lot of us, if we're really honest about what we think of ourselves, a lot of times we don't really think we measure up that much. We're used to big personalities. We're used to people that do all kind of personal branding, and we're used to hearing all the stories. I mean, and all that's for show. But when it comes down individually, most of us realize no one's clamoring for us to be on America's Got Talent. Because we're thinking, no, anybody else can do that better. I mean, we'll take up an offering later in the service, and some of you are thinking, my little bit's not going to help. There are people that make so much more than I do. We'll do a ministry fair where we have all the different areas where people can serve, and some people are going to say, I mean, I realize some just don't want to because they just want to keep their flexibility, but others saying, I don't really have much to offer. I mean, anybody could do a better job than I do. There's a sense of insecurity that a lot of us carry when we're honest. And I'm going to tell you this, that from God's perspective, There aren't any little people in his family. There aren't any insignificant people in his family. Each of us, and I'm not saying this just to make everyone feel good about themselves and go around and say, yeah, I'm awesome. But from God's perspective, you're really important and valuable. And he knows everything about you and me. One of the big surprises in heaven is going to be who gets to sit at the head tables. And it's not going to be the celebrities. There may be a few. But the people that are going to, over time, are the ones that in this world are kind of unimpressive. They don't have a whole lot of fanfare around their life. There are going to be people that no one's heard of except maybe in a small community, maybe just in their family. But I want to read this to you. This will be on the screen. And it's this is important because what it does is it, well, I just want you to hang on to this. Listen, it says, remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you were wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you. This is speaking to the very first followers of Jesus, the early church. The ones that accepted Jesus, in many cases, were not the wealthy, they weren't the powerful, they weren't the well-connected. They were just average, ordinary people. And in many cases, these average and ordinary people paid a high price. They were rejected by their families. They lost their job. They were ostracized in the community because they were taking on this faith that was counterculture. Goes on to say, instead, God chose things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise. And he chose things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful. God chose things despised by the world, things counted as nothing at all, and used them to bring to nothing what the world considers important. As a result, no one can ever boast in the presence of the Lord. The secret to being a follower of Jesus and to have a life of impact and a life of success is not what do you bring to the table. It's have I committed myself to follow him, and am I letting him take the lead in my life? And at the end of my life, I get to find out what impact I've had. But between now and then, it's just an issue of being faithful and trusting that this great God can use me, as tiny and insignificant, like a bee in the animal kingdom, that he can use me, and he will not waste the efforts. And it'll have meaning and it'll have value, and in eternity, I'll be able to look back and see the whole story. There is not a single person in God's family that's insignificant or unimportant. So let's move on. We're gonna, if you could look into a beehive. Now, there's the difference between a nest and a hive. A nest is what you find, and bees build that. Like they might be, you might have one in your attic right now. They build it in trees. I mean, they find all kind of places. That's the nest. A hive is man-made, and that's where beekeepers, and they've been doing this for 4,000 or 5,000 years. They design these boxes and stuff to where the bees will come, and they actually put the bees in it, and they bring in a queen, and all of a sudden this is how you produce honey. If you ever look in one of those things, it's a fascinating thing you see. But one of the things you'll notice about bees is that each of the bees is more concerned about the needs of the colony than they are their own personal desires. Now, and again, you're thinking, you're personifying bees, and look, they're just a bee. There's a study in Indiana, and I'm sure it was my tax dollars and yours at work in very important research, and these guys came up with the fact that they're pretty convinced that bees have emotions. I don't know that I buy that, but these are university professors. I mean, people that are really smart about this. They said they could see that some bees seem to be more adventurous, some bees seem to be stressed out, some of them seem to be laid back. I don't know how all that works. I'm not a bee expert, although I did read this book on beekeeping, but the idea is when you look into the colony, it seems like all the bees are busy about the big project, and that is continuing the species and creating honey. And everyone has a job to do in that. You've got the queen, you've got the drones, you've got the scouts, you've got the foragers, you've got the ones that do all the maintenance inside the colony. I mean, I would say a beehive of activity, but that would be a terrible thing to say in a message about the hive. And I'm going to mention something else in a minute about this adaptive capacity that honeybees have that is really remarkable and is actually opening some doors to Alzheimer's research. But when it comes to Jesus Church, this is important because for Jesus' church to function in a healthy way, we need to all decide, I'm going to put my desires and interest on second or third place and put the needs and the interest of the greater good first. This is not communism. It's not socialism. What it is deciding, I'm not going to put myself in first place. I'm going to put Jesus there and his what he's called us to do. In fact, one of the heart attitudes we have in New Hope is a willingness to put the needs and interest of others above my own. Listen to what it says here in Philippians. It says, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. It doesn't say others are better than you. It says, I'm willing to treat you as if you are. I'm going to make a decision, a personal decision. I'm going to treat you as if you're more important than I am. Can you imagine how families would operate if each of us adopted that, or how a church would operate, or how a community would, or a nation? If you watched any of the wedding yesterday, it was like a 30-hour wedding. But the priest that spoke, South Carolina priest, was talking about this power of love. Well, and I get that, but this power of loving others to the point where I'm putting their needs and interests above my own. If we were to adopt that individually and it spread, it would change the world. And that's what followers of Jesus have been called to do. Don't look out for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. This is what you and I have been called to do. Or I'm going to make that deliberate choice. I've got my own interests and desires and all that, but I'm willing to put them in the back seat to pursue something bigger than me. When the church operates this way, the church benefits, the community does, individuals do, and the world will be changed. When we don't do this, when I decide, you know what, I've got my interest and I'm going to take care of me first and then I'll be looking around and if I have anything left over, when we do that, we've just become common and normal and completely ineffective. Somehow we need to adopt this mindset that is the same one Jesus had and decide I'm going to be a blessing to others and I'm going to allow God to work in my life and through all of us collectively would be a blessing to the world. Another thing you notice when you look at the colony of bees, honeybees, is that there's strong and healthy leadership that plays a key role. And I'm going to talk about the queen bee. This is not Beyonce. This is literally the queen bee. Bill, let's show that picture. So I don't know how this works. So on this side, that's just a normal worker bee in the colony. The queen is the other one. There's only one per colony. The queen is significantly larger than the other bees. Another book I read was Beekeeping for Dummies. This was pretty much in line with, I kind of like the way it was written. And they described the queen bee as an egg-laying machine. During the busy season for the queen, 1,500 to 2,000 eggs per day. Now, when you look at the fact that the bees don't live very long, there's a constant cycle of reproduction because you've got to just to keep it going. So when you look in that bee colony, there's all this stuff going on, but there's constantly new ones coming and going. The queen's really busy. Queen's different than other bees too. The average bee, worker bee, in the busy season lives for 6 weeks. Now, that might seem like, well, that's not very long. Well, the bees that live in the colony in a hive live for about 6 weeks. Solitary bees, which is over 90% of bees in the world, they live about half that long. So about 3 weeks. They pollinate and die. It's basically, they have babies, pollinate and die. I have a baby. But in the colony, when they're together, these workers live longer. They have, and there's probably something to this about having something that you're living for and all that. We'll get into that another time. But the queen, well, the average worker, 6 weeks during the cold season, maybe 9 months because they're not as busy. The queen lives anywhere from probably 4 to 5 years. Now, she's most effective in probably the first 2 years, and then that starts to wane. But the queen is, all the egg production is through the queen. And the queen does something else too. The queen bee has these pheromones, and they do all kind of things influencing the atmosphere inside that colony. The pheromones, some of them, they're all these different chemical compounds. Some of them have to do with maintaining an atmosphere, so maintenance of the colony is good. There is the mating part of it too. There's whole social factors to it. The queen really does adjust what happens inside that colony to keep it healthy, which is why beekeepers, when they start noticing the queen's not doing the job, there are ways to replace the queen. I'll get into that in a minute too. But this whole idea of leadership, another thing about the queen too, is the queen doesn't operate completely independently. There are certain things that only the queen does, but the queen doesn't do everything. For instance, Queen Elizabeth, I don't know her personally, but here's some guesses I have about her. She does queenly things. There's whatever queens do, she does those queenly things. But my guess is there's some things she doesn't do. I bet she doesn't get up and make a Pop-Tart in the morning for breakfast. She's probably got attendants that do the Pop-Tarting. She probably doesn't polish her tiara. My guess is she doesn't drive the Bentley or the Rolls wherever she goes. She has other people that do that. She has specific queenly things. And then there are other attendants that do other things that help her. The same as the queen bee in the colony. The queen bee eats and lays eggs and has attendants that take care of all this other stuff. Even the queen's bathroom, and I'm not going to get too graphic about that, but they clean all that up for her so she can stay busy doing the eggs. My point in this is leadership doesn't have to do everything. Leadership is responsible for its role, but it's all interdependent. The queen could not function without the workers that come along and help. And when we think of leadership, whether it's your organization or whether it's a church, somehow we need to keep this in mind. Listen to what it says here in Hebrews 13. I got two passages from Hebrews 13. First one says this: remember your leaders who taught you the word of God. Think of all the good that has come from their lives and follow the example of their faith. There's a bunch in this. One thing about leaders is leaders need to be talking about what's important and what's right and where it needs to be heading. But leaders also need to be setting a positive example. Sometimes what leaders do is they just exercise power. And they use their power to keep people in place. That's not leadership. That's something else. Biblical leadership is setting a pace. It's showing where to go. It's in the church, it would be follow me as I follow Jesus is the mindset of it. And this whole idea of being interdependent is really important in leadership, where leaders don't operate just on their own. And leadership should be based on merit, not seniority. And some of you work for businesses where the way people get promoted is who they know and how long they've been there. That's really a setup for a pitiful organization. It's not gonna flourish. And it may exist a long time because if there's some things are dead long before they actually die. But a healthy organization is that leadership has earned the right to lead and maintains the right to lead by leaving a good example. At New Hope, one of our requirements for leadership is that people are actively engaged in the mission. Not that they used to be, but they currently are. And if their example ever becomes something that's out of line, if you see me out of line, if you see any of our leaders out of line, then there needs to be a timeout called to address that. Because leaders set the pace. And if they're setting a bad pace or they're heading in the wrong direction, you create all kinds of problems in an organization. Later on in Hebrews 13, it says this. It says, obey your spiritual leaders and do what they say. Their work is to watch over your souls, and they are accountable to God. Give them reason to do this with joy, not with sorrow. That would certainly not be to your benefit. So this idea of leading is when you're part of an organization, if you're at work or in your church, wherever, is you need to be willing to follow leaders as long as they're leading in the right direction. That doesn't mean you get to pick and choose. It just means as long as they're doing things ethically and morally right, you need to follow that. And it's to your benefit to make their job a joy rather than a pain. The moment you and I start getting, and this goes back to that first verse about our own personal desires, some of us drag our feet. I just don't like that decision. I don't think I'm going to support that. Well, is that how you'd want people to follow you if you were in charge? And the answer probably is no. So that following leadership is important. In fact, the pathway to become a leader is to be a good follower. There are a lot of people that are wonderful leaders in their own mind, but they've never learned to follow. And if you've never learned to follow, you'll be a horrible leader. You'll just be an autocrat or just kind of ignorant of what's going on. Let me give you another example, too, is in leadership, No one's above also being a follower. For instance, we did our big food fight a couple weeks ago. I'm the senior pastor here. I'm whatever my position is, I'm there. I've been here longer than anybody else, and I'm older than anybody else. But I wasn't in charge of food fight. I was a certified volunteer. Kim Feld is the project lead on that. My job in the food fight thing was to make her job a success. To say, Kim, what do you need? Now, they're still trying to find something I can do. We're looking hard to find that, but I was a certified volunteer. They did discover I could pick up boxes and carry them to be packed. I took them to Dan. My job is to be the best follower I can. And you need to be in a system where everyone has accountability, everyone has responsibility, and there's never anyone that's outside of that, that is above the fray, so to speak. The moment that leadership doesn't have accountability, healthy accountability, it's a setup for a failure. And it creates problems in organizations all the time where leaders don't have healthy kind of accountability and guidance so that they can stay strong and take care of the organization. In the B world, this is what happens. When the queen loses her effectiveness, the worker bees recognize that, and they will create an atmosphere where the queen decides, in some cases, I better split. And the queen will let off one of these pheromones, she'll get a small swarm, and she'll go off and start her own hive somewhere. Another way that happens is for the beekeepers, and reading my beekeeping book, a beekeeper can decide if the queen bee is not doing her job, they will go in there and capture her. Remember, she's bigger than the rest of them. They can put her in a little glass jar, take her away, and they bring in a new queen. Because what's more important is not, well, gee, she's been a really good queen. We ought to just keep her. No, it's what's going to be the best overall to accomplish the mission. And so leadership always has to be relevant and always needs to be on top of what's going on. And that's the way a healthy organization works. That's the way healthy churches should work. Another thing you learn about bees, and this is really fascinating, is they're willing to learn new skills at every age and stage. There was research done at Arizona State University, and they noticed something fascinating in the bees. There were those that were foragers, and they're the ones that do so much of the work. They're the ones that do the 55,000 miles to come up with one of these. And they said that when they got older, they noticed that some of the foragers could come back and they would learn how to do what the younger ones normally did, and that's maintaining in the hive. And what they discovered is there was a molecular change in their brain chemistry. They actually were not just defying age, they were actually reverting in their age. They were learning some new skills. And they're really excited. They think that there's some possibility here because there's some similar chemicals in the human brain that it might help with Alzheimer's research. But that learning new skills not only helped the colony, but it helped them individually to live longer. And not just live longer, to be healthier as they lived. And this is, the idea here is, the idea of being teachable and willing. What is needed? And what do I need to learn so I can accomplish that? James 4:6 says, God opposes the proud, but he favors the humble. Another word for humble is teachable, open to learn. In the church, what happens, and I want to speak just for a moment to some of us that are older veteran followers, is we really need to be careful. It's easy for us to think, well, I've paid my dues. I can coast now and the young bucks can come in and do it. And let me tell you this, if you're of my generation, if you ever catch yourself saying this, those millennials, slap yourself in the face. I'm dead serious. Slap yourself in the face for being so arrogant. Because I'm going to tell you, every generation, the older generation looks on the younger generation and they put them down. They go, oh, what's wrong with them? They're all, yah, 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 yah. And it's just a bunch of gum flapping. It's the same. And what we do is we're doing the same thing that was done to us. And it's arrogant, it's foolish, and it really does harm building relationships. It's inexcusable to those of us that are veterans. We ought to be looking for the best ways to accomplish the work God's given us in His church. We ought to be adapting, learning. If it's new technology that can work, fine. Not all technology is great, but let's figure out what it is. If it's new curriculum, if it's new strategy, we ought to be embracing that rather than bucking it, saying, I don't want to learn new stuff. That is stupid, and it's going to harm you, and it's going to harm us being able to accomplish the missions God's given us. We need to all be not just growing older, but getting better at what we do. and engaged in it fully and setting a good example so that anyone at any age and stage can say, that's what I want to be. That's how I want to follow. That's the attitude I want to have. One more thing I'll mention about bees and I'll be done. This is something they have in common with a lot of you, is they love caffeine. A lot of plants have caffeine in their system, and the best understanding is that caffeine is a natural deterrent to other insects that could come in and do harm to the plants. However, bees, being great pollinators, they love the caffeine and they're drawn to these plants. And so that, and the thing about caffeine, the bees aren't decaf, they're high caf. A bee in its whole life never sleeps. So it only lives 6 weeks, but it's really living those 6 weeks. I mean, it's really going after. And you look inside the hive, there, I mean, the caffeine thing explains a lot. Here's the point about this. They are they're fully engaged in the work for their whole life. Now you might be saying, well, they only get 6 weeks. In the scope of eternity, how long is our 70 or 80 years going to look? You know, we look at it, 6 weeks, that's nothing. Well, from an eternal perspective, our 70 or 80 years, however long you and I get, it's not going to seem like that much. It's going to be like this. What are we doing with it? Are we actively engaged, fully engaged our whole life with what God's called us to do? Do we recognize it along the way? Or are we just, I'm going to do that later, or I'll put it off? I mean, it would be a shame to look back at the end of our life and say, gee, I wish I had. What we could do right now is say, I get to do this. This is what I'm going to do. Acts 13:36 said, and I love this, it says, for when King David had served God's purpose in his own generation, he fell asleep. He didn't wait, he didn't put it off. He served God's purposes that God had given him. And that's the same thing you and I have a choice to do. And there's no one that can stop. There's not an economic situation. There's not a government. There's not a group of people. There's not an individual. No one can stop me from fulfilling God's purposes for my life. The only one that can is me. And I do that by saying no, or later on, or I'm not sure. I can say yes to him, and I will discover that he's got all kind of plans and purpose for me that will make my life worth it. And at the end of it, I'll look back and say, I am so glad I invested my life in his work. And I didn't waste it. I didn't put it off. I didn't go some other direction. Let's pray together. God, I really do want to thank you for these tiny little honeybees. It's amazing what we can learn as we watch them, but not just being impressed by them, but also recognizing that there's some object lessons there for us. We're not insignificant to you. We have purposes that are unique to us and to our church. There are things you want to accomplish, and you will accomplish through us if we'll let you. If we're willing to lay aside our own desires, our own personal interests, and let them be secondary to yours. I pray that you'd help each of us this weekend, before the weekend's over, to really think about our life from your perspective, how we're using our time, our talents, our abilities, and that we would decide that we're going to give you free rein. And regardless of what anybody else thinks, we're going to be more concerned about what you think. Please speak to us and help us to latch on to you and not let go. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen.